flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest, over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Craig Hoffman.
I had a lot of gummies. Like, not gummies of that kind. Don't you look at me like that.
The Hoffman Show.
Sour worms.
Okay.
Because they had them in the things you can buy. Our little work kitchen area.
Yeah,
the market. Thank you. See, as I said, making sense. Not always my thing. And it's not the gummies.
On the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. Always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Don't get it twisted. It is 5 o'clock on a Tuesday. We are going to welcome in Mitch Tischler, even though we don't have any air horns, because I don't know where the air horns are and Anthony's out. That's okay, though. It is time, though. We have this to play for Mitch. It's time for Not My Beat.
Today's top story, from the perspective of someone who's there.
You are looking live.
This just in.
Not My Beat.
All right, Mitchell is with us for one final time of the season. Mr. Tischler, how are you on this Tuesday?
Meow, 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 meow. I'm good. I come with my own air horns.
You do. You do. They were the cat variety. Who knew?
Who knew?
Everybody now. Just like we all find out. Mitchell, I have a burning question for you before we get into anything else. Did you know before Sunday, after covering this man for a decade, that Tressway was right-handed?
You know, he plays ping pong right-handed, and we had talked about that in the locker room before about being ambidextrous. And I don't know that I knew that he was right-handed. I knew that he does some things with his right hand, but that man is as athletic as anyone in any NFL locker room, and it's crazy to say that about your punter.
That is. I did enjoy that Tress gave like a good dad wind-up to that. There was just kind of like a boom, perfect ball to Ben Sinnott to it. There's like a circular motion.
Well, it was very funny in the locker room afterwards. I was talking to him, and he said Marcus Mariota came over to him and said, hey, you know, great throw right in between the two safeties. And Tress said, man, I'm glad that the ball got there because I only saw one of them. But that was a perfect throw, and I loved it.
That is an outstanding story. All right, Mitch, it's we do Vibe Check Tuesday before we have you on each week, and sometimes I like to bring you into it. As you now have had, you know, whatever number of hours it's been, 36, 48 hours since this game goes down on Sunday, like, how are you feeling about the game, about the season?
Yeah, I mean, about the game, I feel disappointed. Not sad, just disappointed that they didn't come out and play a better football game. I mean, arguably, that was their worst game of the year. Maybe week one against the Bucs, but they didn't turn the ball over quite like they did You know, the other game they had all the turnovers in was the 5 against Philly, you know, at home. They ended up winning that game. It's a shame in the NFC Championship they came out and didn't play their best. But what's encouraging is that it wasn't your foundational pieces that struggled. It was, you know, some of the auxiliary guys who obviously had a couple fumbles and made mistakes. But, you know, Jaden showed who he was. It wasn't his best game himself, but he played well enough that he put the team in position that without the turnovers, they could have won it. So, you know, I'm disappointed, but at the same time, super encouraged by, you know, the front office, the coaching staff, and the players on this roster.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. It's such a bitter end to the season. And even if they lost, it's whatever. But the fact they lost the way they lost just is so hard to swallow. What was it like being there? Because talking to Logan was interesting. He said it felt to him on the sideline like they were sped up, like they kind of felt the pressure for the first time basically all season. Is that something you could feel from the press box, that they were pressing a little bit, that the team was reacting in a way that was different than when they faced other good opponents?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, sped up certainly is I guess one way to put it. I don't know that I really felt that as much. I'll start defensively. I really like, clearly they had a beat on the Jalen Hurts snap count, especially once Cam Jurgens didn't start the game and they were going with a backup center. We saw Frankie Louvu kind of dice through that O-line a couple times at key moments, and I think you could see that, you know, the experience of playing that team, you know, for the third time, that they were able to kind of take advantage of it. Offensively, you know, we saw Jaden make a couple mistakes early in the game on passes out to the flats where the ball just was just short. It almost looked like he was aiming it, you know, more than just kind of letting it loose. And that's been very uncharacteristic of, you know, who Jaden Daniels is. At no point during the week leading up or pregame on the field or being around the guys did I feel like they were tight in any way. And I give Dan Quinn a ton of credit for that. Once I got on the field, though, you know, it felt, sitting in the press box, it felt like I just kept expecting the magic that we had seen all season to resurface. And every time they kind of had an opportunity to really put pressure on that Eagles offense to move the ball, they would turn the ball over. And, you know, the McNichols fumble with whatever it was, a 140 left in the first half, really was, to me, the killer turning point of that game and the kind of the point of no return where you saw the Commanders offense start turning into a little bit of what we saw from the Lions last week, where they were pressing a little bit and feeling like they had to score every possession to keep up. But, you know, these are big-time situations, and Jaden Daniels has played in a ton of big-time games. It's something that a lot of these guys are going to learn from and haven't really experienced before. So that's an Eagles team that's 3-4 years ahead of where Washington is. I am, you know, optimistic and hopeful that Washington will have plenty of more opportunities to play in those types of games.
For sure. I just am scared that they're going to see the Eagles for a lot of them. Maybe scared is not the right term, because you hope that the Washington's good enough to compete, but like, Philly's really young too. They're really good, and they've managed their cap well and all that kind of stuff. So the Eagles are a team that they're going to definitely see again, and hopefully next time that game can be in Landover instead of at the Link. Mitch, I thought you asked a great question, and I actually want to play the answer that Adam Peters gave, or sorry, Dan Quinn gave yesterday at the press conference, where you talked about, you know, how this team was built, right? And Bobby Wagner and Zach Ertz and those guys coming in. And you kind of think as you continue forward building this team that some of those guys won't be around and those types of players won't be around because they'll bring in younger players. And so you basically ask, like, well, how do you balance building or having leadership on the roster with building a contender and having some youth? And this is what Dan Quinn said for the audience that did not hear it.
Some things don't show up on the stat sheet. They just don't. And people like Adam see that and understand that. It may not come in a metric or next-gen stat, but it shows up in a big way. And you've heard me use the word glue guys or great teammates, and all of those things can factor into what, you know, you're looking for to build as a team. So everything matters. And for teammates like that have a different role, all of them have an impact on winning, but their roles may be different. So it'll always be a part of our equation.
Mitch, you asked the question. Why did you ask that question, and what did you make of the answer?
Yeah, I mean, I asked it because one of the big things, you know, Ron Rivera talked about culture all the time, and it's become such a buzzword in Washington and, you know, almost a negative word because it's been so poor amongst this team. But, you know, if you look big picture at this, the way this franchise has built teams over the past decade or so, there aren't a lot of veterans that have come in. And so the onus for leadership has been on the shoulders of the guys who are on their second contracts in the league, but had never really won or done anything themselves, because obviously Washington was never that franchise, you know, that was playing in playoff games consistently. And they hit, you know, at a high rate this offseason, not just the veterans that came in, but across the board. And it's not necessarily the most sustainable plan of action to building a team. Getting Bobby Wagner and Austin Eckler and Zach Ertz were big, big factors in setting the standard for the franchise and in the locker room and on the practice fields. But the idea that you're going to be able to have veteran guys step in and play meaningful minutes isn't really necessarily sustainable. There's only so many of those veterans that, you know, still have gas left in the tank and can help you out. And, you know, you're looking at a roster before this season that you're still waiting for a quarterback. And so it's hard to be aggressive, you know, to winning football games when you're starting journeyman older quarterbacks. This team needs to take advantage of Jaden Daniels on this rookie deal. And part of taking advantage of that is, you know, building for the future in 2 years and 3 years, you know, assuming Jaden continues on the trajectory that he's on, he's going to be looking at a, you know, $500, $600, $700 million contract. Who knows what that's going to look like in the future. And so you're going to need a base of young players that can step in and play and really help you out. And so, you know, I think for both Adam Peters and Dan Quinn, it's going to be interesting to see how they attack this offseason, because you do need those guys who are the locker room glue guys. I mean, you know, there was a lot of laughter about the Bobby Wagner, Jaden Daniels relationship, where they tease each other about reading books and who's better at basketball and whose college is, you know, better and all these different things. And those sorts of things, like Dan Quinn said, don't show up on the stat sheet, but help make a young player feel comfortable in a brand new environment, not to mention a brand new high stress environment. And so I was wondering kind of, you know, now that a standard has been set, can they now make a move towards bringing in youth and layering positions? So if somebody leaves in free agency or gets hurt or doesn't work, that player can step in? Or is the standard something that kind of continues that needs to be set? You know, it needs to be reinforced year after year as the roster turns over. And I thought it was interesting listening to Dan, because it certainly sounds like he thinks, you know, it's important for him to have those types of players. And maybe next year they're able to keep, you know, all of Ertz, Wagner, and Eckler, or a combination of the group. But as you move forward, you know, let's be honest, those three guys didn't have a ton of options around the NFL of places where they were going to go and be able to play meaningful minutes. So as you start looking towards the future, do you start looking internally at guys like, you know, Sam Cosmi, Tyler Biadasz, you know, some of the, you know, Deron, John, one of those, you know, some of those guys, do they become the veterans who are setting the standard, or does he want to continue to bring in kind of new voices? And I just think, you know, as we start talking about how different this roster is going to look next season, because I think it will look very different from 2 seasons ago to this season, there were 33 new players on that initial 53. I think as we go to next year, you're probably looking at probably 20 new players. So the roster is going to be kind of significantly different. And I just kind of wanted to get a feel for where the brain trust was in terms of roster building and how they looked at what they wanted to do in this offseason.
I thought it was a great question. And the more I've thought about their answer, I like it, because I think they understand what made their group special and why they were able to get where they got. part of the situational excellence and some of the little things that just always seemed like they were taken care of until the final game. But the thing that got them ultimately 14 wins out of this season was in large part because of so many of those things. So to say like, oh, we don't need that anymore, I think the question becomes when is the next generation ready to assume those things? And I'd like them, like you said, part of the problem is none of the guys that are kind of in that age to take that on. A guy like Terry, I mean, Terry's going to be 30 next year, but he's had one winning season in the NFL. So balancing those two facts is hard. I guess the good thing that I would say, Mitch, and I'm curious how you feel about this, is you don't have to reinvent that stuff. I'd bring Bobby back. I'd bring Zach back. Austin, it would depend on what else I feel like I can do with that position. But I would bring those two back because both of them are really important to Jaden Daniels. And if I'm going to get the best out of Jaden Daniels, and you tell me I have to bring back a guy in Bobby who was second team all pro and the best leader in the building, fine. I realize he's a little slow in coverage, but fine. And then outside of Terry, the second best target you had on the team. I don't want him to be the second best target next year. I want to upgrade in other places, but you don't necessarily have to, that doesn't have to preclude bringing those two guys back. And thus, I think I would probably do it for another year and then hope that the Terrys, the Cosmes, the Biotishes, and frankly, the Jadens and the Mike Sanders stills are ready to step into a much bigger leadership role at that point.
Exactly. And I think it's important in roster construction that there is a balance between leadership and play on the field. And that Venn diagram happened to have a large overlap this season because Bobby was able to play so well and Dan Quinn and company did such a good job of managing Zach Ertz and practice time and not wearing him down. Even, you know, play number of plays in game, you know, was a masterful coaching job of keeping veterans, you know, light on their feet and, you know, and healthy and, you know, not getting worn down. I don't know that, again, that's particularly sustainable, the Venn diagram of having veterans that can also be very helpful on the football field, because quite frankly, I mean, as anything in life, as you get older, things get tougher. But they did a really good job this season of it. And if Adam Peters is able to identify those guys alongside Dan Quinn, and that's, you know, an area of expertise for this group, that's a really, really strong addition to a football team, and not only worrying about bringing in as many young guys and figuring out who can play, but having folks that can kind of lead the way and show you, hey, I've won a Super Bowl before. I've been on NFC Championship, AFC Championship teams. I know what it takes to get the job done. And, you know, I'm hoping that's something they can keep moving forward with.
Mitch Tischler, co-host of the Beltway Football Podcast with us here on the Hoffman Show. I think there's two other parts of this that I think are pretty important to mention and are worth discussing. One, older players should do better here because of the investments they've made in medical and all of that side of the house. Like, Josh Harris is big on sports science. And so the fact that they're going to have leaders in that field around is going to help. And by the way, you have a general manager and a head coach who are just fine with that. These are not old school guys that are going to say, no, we got to bang our head against the wall. We need more padded practices. Let's bend the rules. Like, no, they're going to listen to the sports science people, and they just got Bobby Wagner and Zach Ertz through a season healthy. They're going to try to do that stuff again if those guys are back. And if I'm a veteran somewhere else and I see that happening and I'm one of these guys that might fit that profile, I'm probably going to want to go to Washington, because now all of a sudden I know they have the know-how to get me through that season. And I think that becomes really important in terms of the recruiting side of it. And then, Mitch, I'm just going to be honest with you. I forgot what the other thing I was going to say was. So I'll let you react to that part first and see if it comes back to my brain, because that's how my ADD goes sometimes.
Yeah, just, you know, rattle that head around. It'll show back up again. Listen, they found two 15-plus-year veterans who were able to step in and, you know, play meaningful minutes. And that's a big deal. To your point about folks around the league seeing what's happening in Washington, you have both the upgrade of everything across the organization kind of behind the scenes. You also have a superstar quarterback, and it's a desirable place to play. And so years past, you know, you didn't necessarily have the option of who you wanted to sign to be your starting middle linebacker, and that's how David Mayo ends up as a starting linebacker on a roster, you know, because you weren't a desirable place to be. The combination of the upgrades on the field and winning combined with the investment to become a more, competitive franchise behind the scenes goes a long way towards, you know, who's going to ultimately be in your building. And you look at what, you know, the Eagles being able to sign Saquon Barkley, you know, last offseason, boils down to he found an optimal situation with a team that was ready to win and a organization that is built well. I'm not saying the Commanders are going to find Saquon Barkley this offseason, but you're in the conversation. You know, if Saquon was a free agent this offseason and was trying to figure out where to go, it's hard to imagine that the Commanders wouldn't be at least on the short list of teams that he wanted to explore, because Jaden Daniels makes your offense, makes your team, puts your team in a position where any given Sunday, at any given point, your team can come back and win a football game. It goes a long way, and it's exciting, and it's going to be a mind shift for yourself, for me, for everyone, you know, around this organization, fan base, media, that the discourse is going to be different this offseason than it's been, and hopefully continues to be different as this team continues to build towards being a perennial contender.
For sure. And I remember the other thing, and it's simply that with Adam Peters in charge and the way that he goes about his business, like when we talk about the Commanders tag, right? Like these guys are future leaders. Like they're built a certain way. The character is a feature, not a bug, in terms of their scouting. So guys like Frankie Louvu, like could he be a leader here in a bigger way and take on more responsibility if Bobby is not back? Like absolutely. The way that he plays and his personality sets up for that. So I think that, you know, Biotish, same thing. The guys they bring in, both in free agency and the draft, it is a culture of leadership. And I think while the know-how of a guy like Bobby specifically, gold jacket, Super Bowl champion, Zach, possible gold jacket, Super Bowl champion, one of the best at his position for a long time, that know-how is irreplaceable. But the culture has been set, and I think there's enough guys that will be back that make up the fabric of who this team is that I feel pretty good about that. And then it's just a matter of who steps up in the biggest moments. And frankly, like Mikey might be with that guy even, you know, if not next year, if a guy like Bobby is back. By year three, like Mike Sanders still is going to be the guy for a decade here that's leading the meetings and all that kind of stuff. And I feel, frankly, Mitchell, excellent about that.
That pick was, I mean, Jaden Daniels is the best pick because, you know, he is who he is and has turned into the quarterback that he is. But Mikey Sanders still, you know, there was a hope that he would be good. And we knew he was, you know, this mature leader from Michigan who, you know, started off as receiver and, you know, made his way to being a DB. But his maturity level is higher than even I expected. And one thing that I really liked a lot was, you know, some of the discourse around Jaden before he was drafted was that he's old and, you know, I don't know if you should draft him. He spent 5 years in college and said another thing. Those 5 years are part of the reason Jaden is as mature as he is. And the fact that this front office prioritizes, you know, leadership and maturity along with ability to play football, because ultimately, obviously, that's the number one thing, you know, goes a long way. But we've talked a lot about these veterans that had major impacts in terms of play on the field in Bobby and Zach and Austin. But you also have to look deeper on this roster. Jamison Crowder, Sheldon Day, you know, a couple of these guys who, I'm not saying that they're superstars or that they're the ones that are, you know, going to ultimately stand up in a room and you know, pound their chest and pump up these guys, but just solid veterans who have been there and done that before and approach the game in a professional manner. You know, all those little things matter, and it's great to see your superstars, you know, lead the way, Terry, you know, starting to embrace that leadership role. One awesome thing in the postgame locker room, Terry was making his way around the locker room, dapping up all the guys, hugging them, kind of whispering a couple words into their ears. And he was still in, you know, his game pants and taking off his shoulder pads, but still in, you know, basically full uniform. And, you know, that sort of stuff is, you know, rah-rah and, you know, not necessarily, not necessarily something that, that fans would know or notice, but it is a difference maker, and it is something that helps the franchise build to become who you want to be.
Without question. Mitch, we thank you for making this show what we want it to be every Tuesday, all season long. Thanks so much for all of your time this year. We'll obviously continue to talk throughout the off season, just not as regularly scheduled. And just thanks, man. I really am glad that we did this, and look forward to doing it hopefully for many more years to come.
Craig, it's been a ton of fun. Thanks for having me. It's been awesome with you and Anthony all season long and all the other producers that you work with. And I'm a phone call, a text message phone call away. Anytime you guys want to pick up some Commander stock, I'm happy to hop on and chop it up with you guys.
We will definitely take you up on that. Appreciate you, buddy, and I will talk to you soon. It's Mitch Tischler, everybody, with us here on The Hoffman Show. Of course, Mitch is the host of the Beltway Football Podcast along with JP Finley. You can catch that in the Monumental Sports app and wherever you get your podcasts. When we get back here on The Hoffman Show, we did not get a chance to do our pick six yesterday because we were busy taking your calls. So here's what I'm going to offer. We can continue to push the pick six back yet another day if you want to blow up our phones right now at 301-230-0980. Or we will get to the pick six and take one final look back at that game from Sunday. Oh, my God. Do we really have to? Yeah, it's the responsible thing to do. So we'll do that or take more of your calls next on the Team 980.
Hey, guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're betting the NFL playoffs, you need to be listening to Cash the Ticket. We're breaking down every single game, totals, and sides all the way to the big game. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app, streaming live on YouTube too at the Team 980. It is time for our pick six at 5:35 because that's how it goes sometimes. Sometimes you just wind up having to do your pick six at six on a Tuesday because your Monday, where you typically do it, was very busy because people were calling in all show long, but we got time to do it now, so we're gonna go ahead and do that. Oh, we got the music and everything. Yeah, so I was not expecting the music, and now we got it. I do think Max, the music from the rejoin is perhaps still going underneath it though. There we go. There was a cacophony happening in my ears. I'm very attuned to such things.
We're figuring it out as we go.
Yeah. No, it's, you got, see, everyone thinks Anthony Haney's just over there putzing around.
Never.
That man is running a circus. It is I, the ringleader of the circus, a confusing and complicating man who should really just get on with his radio show. Okay. Pick six at six on Fridays during the season, and we'll do this for the Super Bowl as well. We pick six players who we think are going to have an outsized impact in the game, and then we review them on Mondays, in this case on a Tuesday, because of where things fell in the calendar with taking a bunch of calls yesterday. So our first player that we selected,
number one,
was Saquon Barkley. Yeah, we did a good job on that one. Unfortunately, the Commanders didn't do a great job on that one, and he was quite good. 15 carries, 118 yards, 3 touchdowns for Barkley. His 2 first touches were touchdowns. He averaged 7.9 a carry. He only had 1 catch for 4 yards, so that was nice. Unfortunately, he didn't really need to catch the ball a whole lot. And he was just fantastic. That first run, it gets out initially because of a mistake by Dante Fowler, but it becomes a 60-yard touchdown because Saquon Barkley is Saquon Barkley. Like, most backs don't make Quan Martin miss certainly as dramatically, but probably don't miss period, the way that Saquon did. Certainly others get knocked down because they're off balance by Jeremy Chinn, and Saquon's able to break free of both of those men. Then the speed to outrun Mike Sainristil back across the field after Mikey went to the sideline, And that's all with guys chasing him and not getting caught. I mean, you see it later. Will Shipley just has to run straight for 60 yards, and he gets tackled at the three by BSJ, who's not the fastest guy in the world. Like, what Saquon does on a regular basis to hit these home runs is just otherworldly. And he was awesome. And this offensive line in front of him was awesome. And that was kind of that.
Number two.
Number two, we picked Diami Brown. Diami had a pretty quiet day in terms of positive production and had a big, big mistake in this game. Brown was targeted 5 times. He had 3 catches, 42 yards, including a 24-yarder. And to his credit, after he had that fumble, he bounced back pretty well. Like, he played hard the rest of the game. He had a couple other nice catches. Unfortunately, that fumble was just a killer early, where you're trying to get back in the game. You put together the first drive. Saquon then has the touchdown. It's like, oh, crap. And you're starting to put together a nice little drive. You're at midfield, and you hit a kind of a middle screen type of thing, or just maybe it was just an inbreaker, and there was another guy in the area who was ready to block. And instead of just getting forward, taking what you've already gotten, getting down and living for the next down, Diami tries to bubble back, and that just doesn't really work in the NFL, unless basically you're Saquon Barkley or Tyreek Hill, or you're a legitimate Xavier Worthy. You're legitimately 4.3 fast, and maybe even 4.2 fast. Like, it's just not going to happen. And so, yeah, it was disappointing for Diami, who had just a sensational playoffs. I would 100% be trying to bring him back as long as it's not too cost-worthy. I would not be trying to bring him back as my number two receiver, but I would be trying to bring him back knowing if my number two gets hurt, that I have a guy that can produce at a high level for me, that knows the system, that's going to play hard. I got a lot of love for Diami Brown and the way that he showed himself this season.
Number three
was Frankie Louvu. Very interesting day for Frankie Louvu. Very up and down day. I think part of the reason this score gets so sideways is kind of Frankie Louvu. Which I don't mean to put that all on Frankie, but he shot a lot of gaps in this game, and that turned into him having some enormous plays. Tackle for loss, the speed at which he plays with gets him a sack, and he's very, very explosive as a player. But sometimes you shoot the gap, and then the ball goes the other way. And on the second, I believe it was, big Saquon run, maybe it was the third. It was the third. The 22-yarder he had at the start of the fourth quarter, right before the tush push nonsense, which obviously was another signature part of Frankie's day. Frankie shoots up the field, and there's nobody there to really set the edge anymore. And if you are not pass rushing, or the run doesn't go hard to the outside, that can get you in trouble. If you think you're on it and you're not, not exactly great. He grades out pretty mediocre on PFF. They gave him a 52 grade overall, 52.7 run defense, 48.6 tackling, 67 pass rush grade, 68 in coverage. He had 4 pressures on the game per PFF's metric. I think he had 6 officially per Next Gen Stats. Ultimately, 1 sack. But that was the other thing, is like, he had a couple hurries. He had a couple of times where he was able to get close to Jalen Hurts, but he just couldn't finish. And like, finishing those plays is the next big step for Frankie Louvu. It's how he goes from a good player to a great player. And so in many ways, this was an exciting game for Frankie Louvu. If you're thinking about his development, where it's like, what can he be moving forward if he can take that next step? But taking that next step is really, really difficult. So a little bit more discipline from Frankie, I think, next year goes a long way as a run defender, and then a better finish as a pass rusher. The other thing I'll say about Frankie is him as an edge pass rusher, I'm liking less and less. Like, I think I might just play him as a off-ball linebacker who blitzes a whole lot, because occasionally can play on the end some of the 5-down stuff, or the odd front stuff where they got the 3 guys down and then the 2 stand-up edge players. But he didn't get a lot of his sacks from like one-on-one pass rushing an offensive tackle on 3rd down this year. So I don't know. I know that the Micah Parsons thing is exciting and enticing, but like, he didn't actually do a great job of that, where he was great as a blitzer. So something to chew on for Joe Witt and Dan Quinn this offseason. All right, we got three more players to talk about in this game. We will do so next after a quick look at what's trending. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Streaming live on YouTube, too, at the Team 980. We'll scrounge up a couple things for real things coming up next as we are off the air at 6:15 tonight. That is when we give way to, I believe it's Georgetown Hoops tonight. There's so many basketball games this week. We're actually not going until 7 again for the rest of the week because we got so many different games. So Georgetown tonight. We got the Wizards, and I believe Maryland plays tomorrow. Both teams are playing tomorrow. I think the Wizards are over on Bloomberg. We'll be live at Capital One Arena on Thursday ahead of the Wizards and Lakers. I'll actually be at Capital One Arena all day because the Mystics are introducing their new head coach and GM in the morning. So I'll be sitting down with them and attending that press conference. So a long day at the old Capital One Arena. If any of my friends are listening and want to meet me for lunch in downtown D.C., holler at your boy. I'm going to have some time before I got to set up for the old radio show. We'll do that on Thursday and then be back in the chair Friday. And there's another Georgetown game. I believe that one's Georgetown-Butler, but tonight might be Georgetown-Butler. I don't know. Georgetown's playing basketball. I went to Syracuse, and that's the promo that they get. Max, did I just get myself fired?
No.
No.
No, we've had people say much worse things on air.
That's a great point. Look, some of my goofball colleagues... Look, Drab's my new boss.
Excellent point.
So,
I think we're pretty clear.
Yeah. He's not going to be psyched about that, but Drab, you licked the toilet seat within the last 6 months. So,
checkmate.
Yeah. I think I was on the junkies after that happened. I think, or when it was about to happen, one of the two. They're teasing it. That it either happened or was about to happen. I've tried to block it out of my memory. And then they're like, with that, let's bring in Craig. And I'm like, cool, guys. I'm here to talk about football. What did I just walk in? Oh, closes. I just wanted to be the Simpsons meme. I wanted to disappear back into the bush. Those silly fellas. They'll be on it. They'll be on at 6 a.m. tomorrow. You filled in with those guys yet?
I did the Christmas stream from here, but I have not gone in when everyone's here.
It's an experience.
I'm sure. I have to prepare myself.
Very sleepy crew until the lights go on.
I'm sure.
And then that's morning radio.
Once the coffee's going, they're going.
The caffeine cakes gets them all waked up.
Yeah.
And then off they go. All right, let's get to the back half of our pick six. We don't need to play the whole intro again, but Max, if you want to put the music back on underneath, we can do that. Oh, look at you, Max. You're a pro. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise.
I try.
You try. All right, let's get back to it. Our pick six at six that we picked on Friday, we review here on a Tuesday because we took a bunch of calls yesterday.
Number four
in the pick six at six. We picked Jalen Carter. And I think the Commanders did an okay job on Jalen Carter. He didn't wreck the game. They had a lot of other problems. Now, unfortunately, some other of the interior linemen had great games. Milton Williams was really good. Jordan Davis had a sack. He only played 10 or 13 snaps. He got a sack. Good for him. Williams had a sack, and then I think also I had a ball batted early on in that game. And Jalen Carter actually graded out. Where did he wind up? Let's sort by total snaps because he plays a billion snaps. He graded out 63, 56 run defender, 28 tackling grade. That tends to bring it down. 71 pass rush grade. So he had 8 total pressures in the game. It's not like he didn't do anything. And Jaden just did a good job of evading him. The other thing that I thought was interesting, and I don't know if I'll ever get an answer to this. I don't know if I'm going to care about this question by the end of the week, but Trent Scott started this game at right guard, but Chris Paul actually played quite a bit in this game. Chris Paul wound up playing. Oh, it's probably because I'm looking at the defense. I need the offense. That will tell me how many snaps. He wound up playing 28 of the 79 snaps in this game. So I just thought that was interesting that, for as much as we talked about what options do they have, they wound up rotating. And Chris Paul, I think, did a good job. He was really stout, but also there's some other issues with him in terms of mobility. So Carter gets him on some speed. But overall, that was not the biggest problem in the game.
Number five.
Pick John Allen as number five. Again, like on the list of things that went right, wrong, like I don't think John had his worst game by any stretch of the imagination, but he wasn't earth-shatteringly good. You know, played 55 snaps, graded out PFF at a 55.7. That's like high yellow, 66 run defense, 70 tackling, 62 pass rush. I don't understand how he's above 55.7 in every single category that PFF does, and then he has a 55.7 grade. Again, I don't get how PFF's grades work, but they're the best thing we got. Overall, like, not an enormous impact in the game. Made some tackles, pushed the pocket a few times, needed a much bigger impact performance considering the day that they had defensively, and that kind of is what it is on the John Allen of it all. And then last but not least,
number six.
Zach Ertz was freaking awesome on Saturday, or on Sunday. He had arguably his best game all season. He graded out at an 82 on PFF, played 63 snaps, 53 of them were pass snaps, and 10 run block snaps, and he just consistently got open, caught the ball. I mean, even a couple of targets where he's open and Jaden misses him, like he could have had an even bigger day on a day where he was targeted 16 times, 11 catches, 104 yards, averaged almost 10 a reception, had 28 yards after the catch. So he had a little bit more after the catch than he usually did this season. I will just say this, like, we're going to get a lot deeper into this stuff over the next couple weeks, obviously. Zach Ertz and Bobby Wagner. But Zach Ertz, like, I'm bringing that dude back. I think the way that he played this season, the fact that he's going into the offseason fresh, like, I'm high on that relationship and keeping that relationship going. And as long as you think you can simultaneously develop Sinnott, because he was a second-round pick and you do need to get more out of him next year, maybe the snap count in the season looks a lot more even. If Zach is up for that, he's got to be on board. But I do think that would be a great thing for Zach. Hey, man, one more year, we got you. We're going to take care of you. But some of that is you're going to have to make sure that your guy Benny is getting the snaps that he needs to develop. And that's going to be both in practice and on the field. So, but also, like, they're going to have to give Zach rest in practice. So, like, Sinnott should have an opportunity. So how do they balance that between he and John Bates, who I think has 1 year remaining? But if Bates is a free agent, that's something they're going to have to take care of because he's a different caliber of blocker at tight end. So there's a lot to consider for the Commanders and Adam Peters to take care of. That's why they're paid all that money. And that's kind of the process that they're embarking on right now. When we get back, we'll wrap up the show with Real Things Real People Said in real microphones. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. And some breaking news, actually. Great news that I would say it was expected. Cliff Kingsbury staying. That reported by... That's Max, you want to go full woo into the microphone?
Hooray!
Was that a hooray or a woo?
It was a woo.
The woo! First one looked like a woo. And then I said, do that in the microphone. And you went, hooray! And I was like, that's not what you said. Hooray, woo! Woo, hooray! Cliff Kingsbury's not going anywhere. That's excellent news. But it's also expected. Like, Cliff said all along he was having the most fun he's had in a long time. Okay, why do people leave things they're doing that are the most fun that they've had, the most fulfilling they've had? Money. Could Cliff have gotten more money if he went to the Saints and got a head coaching job? Yeah. Are the Saints going to pay top-of-the-market money for a head coach? Nope. Is Cliff already making head coach money because the Arizona Cardinals gave him an extension a year before firing him, and thus he is getting paid until 2027? Yes. Yes, that is true. So he is probably making close to $10 million a year. I think it's probably $7.5 million from Arizona. And he's probably making $2 million+ here to be the OC. I think Cliff Kingsbury having fun making $10 million a year is probably a very happy Cliff Kingsbury. Why would he be in a rush to go somewhere? And I think the other part of this, Max, that, like, just this is so unsurprising that, like, yes, it's news, because he has now formally pulled himself out. Like, he told other teams he wouldn't interview during the Commanders' playoff run, according to Jordan Schultz, who reported this, NFL Insider. And so he hadn't interviewed with New Orleans, for instance, the team that he still was theoretically in the mix for. But, you know, he talked about how he learned a lot from Dan Quinn. He learned a lot from Adam Peters. He looks at the setup here and is like, that's what I want. I realize how important ownership is. I realize how important the relationship was with the GM. Why would he go to New Orleans where I don't know that he knows Mickey Loomis, the GM down there, and start something from scratch? Like, Cliff knows a lot of people, and I'm not saying he necessarily has to know the GM going in, but I do not see this man leaving for anything short than a no-brainer opportunity. And that's going to be owner, GM, possibly quarterback, but certainly some elements of the roster. And that opportunity didn't exist anywhere this cycle. Nevertheless, what's left in this cycle?
I mean, like, the only job that, like, was even a maybe was Chicago. And the second that got filled, it was almost a guarantee, at least in my mind, especially just the vibes you would get from him in the press conference. Like, he even said, like, it would take a lot to leave this kid. And I think he'll be around for a little bit.
I do too. And I think something that's, I guess, underrated about, like, the Lions' success, maybe not underrated, but underappreciated by a casual fan, is the amount of continuity they had on their staff year over year over year. And for them, they got to do that with a quarterback in Jared Goff, who is not the youngest, like, kind of in that mid-tier, but is also not a superstar, right? But the general star power on their roster plus the continuity is what made them into a 15-win team, the number one in the NFC, number one seed in the NFC, and the favorites until the Commanders knocked them off. And obviously they had a ton of injuries and they had a kind of wacky game with five turnovers and the whole deal. So I'm very curious to see if the Commanders can, for a couple of years, get that level of continuity. And if Jaden obviously can hold that over. I'm curious to see what happens in Detroit as they move on from Ben Johnson and bring in someone else off of that Sean Payton tree. But the thing is, like, at least for Detroit, Dan Campbell's an offensive coach and is, I think, more capable than people realize of running an offense. If Dan Campbell had to be an OC, he could be an OC. I don't know that he's a great OC, and it certainly is not his highest and best use. Being a head coach and overseeing the whole thing is his highest and best use. But there is a system there that is Dan Campbell's offense that is a supplicant of the, I don't know if I use the word supplicant correctly. It's an offshoot. That word I'm 100% sure on. An offshoot of the Sean Payton offense, and he just brought in someone who was in Detroit 2 years ago, left Detroit to go to Denver to coach with Payton, and now is coming back to be his offensive coordinator and the person who runs that and ultimately will call the plays. So I think that's going to be the interesting thing, is, like, they've created something here in D.C. that's, like, kind of their own deal. It's like Cliff's offense that he brought from college, married with Anthony Lynn's stuff, married with some of Bobby Johnson's stuff, with Tavita Pritchard's stuff. And, you know, we heard in week 16, the Jamison Crowder touchdown play to win the game is something that David Blau, the assistant quarterback's coach, like, he drew that play up. So they're kind of willing to do anything, which is cool. But Cliff does an excellent job of making it cohesive, and it all works together, and he calls it really well on top of having a good structure to it. So I think that is something that's going to be the ultimate test, since ultimately Cliff will leave, right? Unless all of a sudden they go out and win a Super Bowl and Dan Quinn is like, this competitor's life, I've lived it long enough. I'm retiring and I'm handing the headset to Cliff. And then Cliff gets to stay here. Cliff is going to probably leave, and it might be next year. It might be the year after, right? 2025, 26 would be next offseason. 27 is the year he stops getting paid by Arizona finally. So either they're not good enough for him to get a head coaching job, or he's probably, with Jaden being the driving force behind the success, going to be good enough that he's in the mix next year and certainly the year after if he wants to sit out one more cycle. Then what? That's the question. I still think it's worth acknowledging that this does not mean that the entire staff is staying in place. That would be incredible if they get that kind of continuity. And Detroit had kind of that. I mean, Antoine Randall L. was their wide receivers coach for basically the entire time. He just left with Ben for Chicago. Hank Frankley has been their offensive coordinator, or their offensive line coach, which is a really, really important position. And there's a chance that he could still leave in Detroit. But like Randall L., Fraley, Johnson, obviously Campbell, Mark Brunell has been their quarterbacks coach for a long time. They had extreme continuity. And that is something that if Washington can pull that off and keep Tavita, keep Blau, keep David Rye, the tight ends coach, keep Bobby Johnson, keep Anthony Lynn, who I'm sure will be coveted, although he's got a pretty good role here. It's going to be hard for him to get, unless he's getting a play calling OC job, which I don't even know if he wants at this stage in his career. I do think there's a really good chance that they keep a lot of the staff, and that'll be really cool to see moving forward and what they can do with Jaden Daniels in year two. We'll also see what kind of talent they surround him with, and we'll start talking about some of that, the roster decisions, tomorrow here on the Team 980. That's it for the show today, though. We are done in 25 seconds. We give way to Georgetown Hoops here on the Team 980. What was I going to tell you about? Make sure you're listening every day for the Slam Dunk in Vegas contest. Just listen to the Odyssey app for at least 1 hour every single day. You're automatically entered to win. Trip of a lifetime and $20,000 to Vegas. We'll see you tomorrow. More chances to win then here on The Hoffman Show.